This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall, Franklin, Kentucky. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Stephen Hennessy is going to join us later on this hour as we are watching, awaiting the start of the second round of the United States Open. Of course, we're all waiting for Team USA to get on the pitch today against Australia as they try to go 2-0 in their World Cup play. Lou Finocchiaro is going to join us in the next hour as well. Sneaky good, really good main event here, Manuel Kapp. Going up against Horiguchi here in the main event. And Kapp is a small betting favorite. We'll get to that, as well as Alex Crook's going to join the program to break down everything in said World Cup. But Jensen, let's begin with what we saw yesterday, what we might see today at our national championship. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Great conversation in the last hour with Thomas Gable. Please like, subscribe to the VSiN by the Books podcast. He said they've got liability on old Wyndham Clark, who is back to playing really good golf. You and I have talked a lot about Wyndham here in the last couple of weeks leading up to this U.S. Open, former U.S. Open champion at LACC a couple of years ago, back at that version of it. But Jensen, this is a different version, different venue, Shinnecock Hills. It's not playing like a typical Shinnecock Hills, but that is subject to change, of course.
Of course, we have just a handful of guys, it looks like, that are finishing up their first rounds from yesterday. And right now, of guys that are out in round two, just two guys currently under par for the round. William Mao is minus one. Fan favorite of the show, Sudarshan Yelamaraju, is at one under as well. Everyone else, even par, including Bryson DeChambeau, who was out there already. Colin Morikawa is also at even par. And then a handful of guys that are already one over, two over, just three gentlemen, John Perry, Harry Hall, Rocco Repetto Taylor of Spain. They are at three over for their second round. Dave, we were surmising here for people that want to get in live and kind of looking where this cut might go. Right now, projected at plus two, it is top 60 in ties. There is no 10-shot rule here in the United States Open. You surmise we're going to see, you think, plus four, plus five by the time it's all said and done for the cut. Yes?
I really do. I think this number is going to go up. I think it has to, especially if you're mentioning right now, they're going to switch those pin positions. I'll tell you this, the USGA does not like what they saw yesterday. They're not going to be happy with that many guys under par. We mentioned this yesterday leading up to the U.S. Open. In the history of this tournament at this venue in the United States Open at Shinnecock Hills, three players in the history of four times playing the event have finished in red numbers under par. How many do we have right now? Six, seven, eight. That is not what they are looking for here. I'll just say this, and I'm probably in the next commercial break going to get in there. Scotty Scheffler, 14-1, two over par right now, eight off the lead of Wyndham Clark. I think I'm going to feel foolish if I don't auto-bet that right now. At least something in pocket on Scottie Scheffler here at that number, Jensen. I know he looks a little bit off the boil, as Paul McGinley says on the Golf Channel there with some of the European accents, but I got to think that the harder this gets, the better it's going to be for guys like Scottie and the best players in the world. So I might be hopping in at 14-1. Normally, it's an auto-bet for us at 10-1. At 14-1, I don't want to back off now. So I think I'll be playing Scottie if you're looking for something live here at almost 14-1. USA is going to be on the pitch here later on today against Australia, Jensen, and it's the second game here in the group stage. Looked really good a week ago. Feels like a year ago playing that first one there against Paraguay, but we're back in action today against Australia. What do we make of that week delay? Can we keep that momentum up going in here into match number two?
I think we'll be fine. A couple of ways to attack this match if you're just joining us. Again, both the United States and Australia winning their first matches in Group D, so they both have 3 points apiece. United States one goal ahead of Australia on goal differential, but it'll come down to the head-to-head here, Dave. A couple of ways to attack it. Number one, if you're a DraftKings customer, great promo out there. They're offering insurance. If the United States money line does not cash for you, you will receive a bonus bet back. So great way to kind of play that. Dave, I also, in the break, Added the under 2.5. Found that at plus 104 on Novig. I do believe both these teams will still be very smart. And knowing where they are as far as the points are, a draw for the United States and Australia all but assures them qualification into the knockout stage. And let's be honest, that's what it's all about. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of chances taken here. If you get some counters and you get some numbers forward, then I think you could go for it. But Dave, just to know that these teams are looking ahead still, I did play a half unit on the draw at plus 420. That's elevated from plus 350. Mm. If you are a Hard Rock customer, they are offering a profit boost on anything that's 3-1 odds or longer. So I got that up to plus 420 for a half unit on the draw just in case. So again, we could win 2 out of 3 of these wagers and be good. And if it does draw, we get the insurance back from DraftKings for that promo that they're offering for this match this afternoon.
I know there are other matches out there in World Cup play today. We'll get to some of those here a little bit later on in the Daily Docket this hour, we promise. But we are really focused on Team USA today against Australia. You can understand why that is the case. Hey, maybe if the Knicks can win a championship for the first time since 1973, maybe Team USA can really make a deep run here in this World Cup, because I don't think a lot of people saw this championship coming. But they had the ticker tape throughout Manhattan yesterday. Looks like, yeah, you're always going to get a couple of those things that happen and some arrests here and there. But for the most part, it seemed to go off without issue. And Jensen, it is a team, and you've got some nice tickets now. You already cashed some nice ones here, 16-1. New York, I don't want to say they got rich on it, because sportsbook's never going to lose in the long run. But it was a really good result for New Yorkers who bet with their heart and also with their head.
Yeah, certainly. And so much so that Thomas Gable talking about it. Well, we need to back up an extra Brinks truck here for all of the onslaught, the one-way action that it was on everything Knicks. This figure published yesterday, a great friend of the show, Christopher Altruda, posting the New York State Gaming Commission reporting a mobile sports betting loss of over $48.5 million for the week ending June 14th, that coincides with the Knicks winning the NBA title. What does that mean from last year? Well, a $587.5 million revenue with handle upwards of 50.3%. That swung $102.85 million to the negative. So almost a 190% differential. Unbelievable what that run, and it was historic. You went 15-1, the Knicks did, to win the title. We shall see how much of that money resurfaces, Dave, when we get to the NFL season. I would imagine those operators will have a lot of those dollars coming back through the doors.
I think you're exactly right, my friend. You've been right about Major League Baseball and maybe baseball Armageddon that could be headed if we can't get a new agreement reached. I wonder, do you make anything of this with the latest reports? Again, I'm happy that the both sides at least are talking, Jensen, even if it's not signifying a whole lot at this juncture.
Well, the latest proposal about where the owners basically want to eliminate high school eligibility for the amateur draft and institute an international draft. Now, an international draft was something that was talked about on both sides previously. I still think they're pretty far away from what it looks like that would be amiable to both sides. Bottom line, this latest offer basically would cut almost $1 billion. That's with a B. $1 billion of compensation through the amateur ranks. It would infuse a lot more talent into the college ranks because, Dave, you would not be eligible for the Major League draft by this rule until after your sophomore year of college. So you're thinking of guys that committed in high school. I mean, I was one of them. I committed to Vanderbilt, but I was still in the draft as a high school kid. I decided to forego it, go to Vanderbilt 3 years later, became a third round selection. But I don't see this being an item that gets agreed upon whatsoever. In fact, Major League Baseball Players Association response to the owners, as Goose would say, you know, the finger. That's exactly what it was to Rob Manfred and the ownership with this latest proposal.
Let me ask you, and I'm not going to put you inside those rooms, Jensen, and I don't want you to solve all of baseball problems here. But if you were inside that room, Like, what would the suggestion be? And I know it's going to get down to the brass tacks. It always does. You know, whether it's salary cap, they're not going to use that language and all that. It does feel like that is ultimately where, you know, the rubber's going to hit the road at the end. Is there anything that can be said here in June, July, so that we can avoid possibly playing that ultimate game of Armageddon chicken?
Yeah, I mean, selfishly from the player side, when you look at what the offers have been so far, at least the structure of them, the Players Association side has wanted penalties for owners that don't spend. And there are plenty of them, Dave. And any owner who cries foul, they're all billionaires, okay? Any owner that cries foul about, oh, you're not losing money, that's not going to fly, okay? The words salary cap, that is like Voldemort in Harry Potter, he who shall not be named. That we don't talk about that in the Players Association because it's a non-starter. So how do you get to the middle? I think you can get there by incentivizing more spending, which is, hey, if you spend, you win. That people come out. They want to see good teams. They want to see winning.
Yep.
How do you create a revenue share with TV money that benefits everyone? Because right now, Dave, take, for example, the Dodgers, their TV contract allows them to spend beyond what any other rich team can, let alone the league. So an idea would be to have every club, every revenue dollar just from media rights gets put into one pot and everyone gets an equal share. So if the Dodgers make an exorbitant amount, great. Everyone gets a share. Now you're going to have some of the teams are like, I don't want to do that. But that would be a way to start. And we'll see what kind of cooler heads prevail here in the coming months.
Maybe you should be in that room. Just saying. All right, when we come back, we'll get to the Daily Diamond and take a look at the slate in Major League Baseball today and also a pretty good sneaky main event that we'll get to for the UFC. That is all next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books here on this Friday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here with you. Get back to the United States Open as they're getting ready, getting those guys out there for that second round to begin. New pin placements today. Looks like maybe a little bit more wind here early on in the morning, but we shall see what the afternoon holds for these gentlemen. Lots to get to, including some World Cup soccer that we'll talk about here coming up in the Daily Docket. But right now, it's all about the boys on the diamond. Yes, it's today's edition of the Daily Diamond. Jensen, we got robbed of a great pitching matchup yesterday that everybody was pretty excited about here to get the studs here for Philadelphia and Milwaukee on the pitch. And that's not going to happen here or on the rubber today. But what do we make here of some of these matches that we see? And Philadelphia in general, they're going to take on they got this weird scheduling quirk here with the Mets and Phillies. They won't play today, but then they're going to play on Saturday and Sunday, obviously, with World Cup soccer taking over in a couple of these cities.
Yeah, nice win yesterday by your Mets. I got a little hairy there at the end there, but they get it across the line, even with the tying run coming to the plate. So great job. Congrats to everyone who tailed my Mets money line. Nice little plus money price there as an underdog. And the over nine ends up getting home as they score a run in the ninth there for us to get that right. A couple of series to focus on. First, let me take the Tampa Bay Rays. They just got crushed on their West Coast swing to California, went 1-5, got swept by the Dodgers. Well, all's well that ends well at home, because that's been the elixir for Tampa Bay here so far this season. They are 15-5 as a home favorite, Dave. Now, rubber's going to meet the road here. And taking on a Nationals club that's been one of the best, speaking of the National League East, not only there, but also in the National League this year. Washington is 21-13 straight up as a road dog. However, they're only 2-4 straight up in the last six road starts by Cade Cavalli, who gets the ball for the Nats today. Rays a short home favorite price. I absolutely love it. They get the day off to kind of reconvene, get themselves right. So I will take Tampa minus $1.20 on the money line there to open the series at Tropicana Field. One parlay to put in so far today, Dave, and we're just going to go aces up. We've got Tarek Skubal at home for the Tigers. They're a longer money line price at about 237 against the White Sox, who a pinch hit grand slam by Andrew Benintendi, ends up beating Camilo Duvall and the Yankees late in that one yesterday. So we will take the Tigers on the money line, and we will parlay them with those New York Yankees, who welcome in the struggling Cincinnati Reds. It is Cam Schlittler Day there at the stadium. Found this parlay on Novig at minus $1.06, Dave. So combining Yankees money line, Tigers money line with two of the aces, two of the best. I think we can get that one close and across the line for almost even money. But $1.06, that parlay is Yankees money line with Tigers money line with Yankees money line. One other total for you. We're going to play Angels Athletics over 9.5. Rinse and repeat here, Dave. When we've got an opportunity to take an over in Sacramento, that is what we're going to do. And they are 7-4-2 to the over when they are a home favorite, which they will be tonight. The Angels absolutely stink. Their pitching is awful. And Sutter Health Park, keep this A's offense rolling. They did it last night, 5-0 a winner. That under ends up hitting, but I think we end up getting an over here later on tonight, 9:40 p.m. Eastern time. So over 9.5 minus $1.15 for Angels in Athletics later on tonight.
When Lieutenant Caffey goes to Captain Ross in A Few Good Men, he says, "I've got Markinson." You don't have Markinson, Danny. Markinson's a crazy man. There is no Markinson. Markinson's gone. I'm looking at the Nationals at 7-1 to make the postseason, and that feels like Markinson. Like, can we look at them and say that, do we really have something here in the Washington Nationals? And again, I'm going to give you three price points. They're all the same. The Nats at 7-1, the Miami Marlins at 7-1, or the Mets at 7-1 to make the postseason out of the National League. If you had to wager one of them, and obviously the Nats, you're getting a head start on those other two right now. If you had to play one of those 7-1s, which one do you think actually will not disappear like Colonel Markinson did?
So I would remove the Nationals. Dave, they're dead last in pitching wins above replacement. I've never seen this for a team that right now would occupy a playoff spot. Point three pitching wins above replacement. And only other caveat to that is, they are fourth in offensive wins above replacement at 11.5. That's why they are where they are. They absolutely score as good as anybody. They're the top scoring offense in Major League Baseball, but they give up runs like a sieve. To answer your question, you know, Miami's offense is still serviceable. The Mets are awful offensively, but are they catching fire at the right time? I think you're probably flipping a coin between the Mets or the Marlins at this point. And I would lean Miami just because I trust their pitching much more than I would the Mets at this point.
I tend to agree. I think that's the way to go. No disrespect to DC, but I think I'd go with the Fighting Fish. It's 7-1. Feels like a playable number, only two games back right now of that final wild card spot. We mentioned kind of the oddities here with the scheduling, with the World Cup interfering with the Phillies and the Mets series. It's happening with the Cardinals and the Royals as well. So they've got a bizarre off day on a Friday. They'll be back on Friday, on Saturday, on Sunday. They're back today. They'll be off tomorrow. So they'll have that off day on a Saturday. The Cardinals are 2-1 to make the postseason right now in the National League. And Jensen, again, I don't want to put them in the same category as the Nats because I think their metrics are going to be better than what you just laid out here for the boys in D.C. But where are you in St. Louis long-term? Like, nobody, at least I didn't see this coming at the beginning of the year, that they would even be viable for a wild card spot in the National League with all this young talent. I think some people look at them and say they could be the worst team in the National League, and they've been anything but. Are they, in your eyes, potentially sustainable at a price point of 2-1 to make the postseason?
They would need at least one starter that generates swing and miss, and I would, again, everyone needs relief opportunities and, and guys that generate swing and miss. I think it's at least a starter, and it's at least a bullpen guy, because their offense has actually been league average or better in a lot of categories. They're 15th in scoring. They're 16th in homers. They're 8th in on base. They're going to have two all-stars in Jordan Walker and Dustin May. And, I mean, Alec Burleson's challenging. J.J. Weatherholt is challenging. Their top four with Weatherholt, Ivan Herrera, Burleson, and Walker is a huge reason why they right now are 7 games over 500. So I think that is their calling card thus far. I just can't trust the pitching long-term unless they do get some influx before the deadline or at the deadline. Right now, if you were to start a postseason series, it's probably Dustin May in game one. It's probably young Michael McGreevy in game two, and then kind of figure it out from there. I'll tell you, it'd be fascinating. Guy by the name of Sonny Gray used to pitch in a Cardinal uniform. Oh. And if Boston continues to stink, that guy actually makes sense. He would be your guy. And what the acquisition cost might be, notwithstanding, you know, I would say him. I would look at a Joe Ryan from the Minnesota Twins. You're looking at guys that can generate some swing and miss at that rotation, have had some postseason experience. That would be a big get for the Cardinals. One of those guys, not saying specifically, but one of those guys in that stature, that answers a big gaping hole atop that rotation for St. Louis.
You know, again, shout out to Will Hill. Check out his podcast here in the with our VEASAN podcast. Should have been more pod. We were discussing this yesterday, Jensen. I'm curious to get your thoughts. I thought it was interesting the way you phrased it with Thomas Gable in hour number one. When you look at the American League and how shallow it really is, right? That's really not a deep end that you're swimming in here. And that if there is a long shot, and this is a conversation Will and I were having, and I'm curious your thoughts. If there was a long shot right now to make the American League playoffs, and I'm talking about teams way under 500 right now, or, you know, like Baltimore, 6 games under, Houston, 6 games under, then the Royals are 14 and the Tigers are 14 games under 500. Do those teams, and they're only 6.5 back, Kansas City and Detroit for a wild card, are those playable teams at this juncture? Because we're getting into late June now here. We're going to turn the page to June 20th tomorrow. Or is it just too much sand in the hourglass is already gone for these outside shots like Detroit and or Kansas City to still make a viable run?
I mean, you're 2 weeks under 500. Kansas City, Detroit, Boston, and LA. You're almost at a point where you have to draw a line through all four of those teams. And that pains me to say it on Kansas City. Okay, if there's a team, because the American League Central is the gift that keeps on giving, Cleveland cannot sustain right now because they've lost Jose Ramirez for at least a month and they don't have Chase DeLauter. So if I'm going to hitch my wagon, I pick the Royals to win the division at the beginning of the year. They're starting to show signs offensively. It'd be the team that I would take a stab at because Detroit is already listening to offers for Tarek Skubal. So that tells me, and I know JJ Piccolo is not going to, he's not hitting the eject button until the very last minute, especially in Kansas City.
From your lips to God's ears. Come on, Kansas City. Let's make a run in the second half. All right, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the College World Series. We're down to two there. And the World Cup, not just the United States, on the pitch today. We'll break those games down next right here on VEASAN by the Books.
VEASAN by the Books, right here on VEASAN.
Rejoice, America. Our football is right around the corner. Can't wait for that season, but the best bettors are already prepared for it. On Monday, you can be prepared as well. VEASAN's going to release our NFL betting guide. It's packed with everything you need to attack futures, win totals, divisional races, and the entirety of the upcoming season. You can lock in that early bird pricing on our football special for just $175. You can be among the first to get the guide when it drops next Monday. So the sooner you sign up, the more value you will get. Full access to everything we do across every major sport through the Super Bowl next February. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VEASAN Watch app, and so much more. Head over to VEASAN.com/subscribe right now. That's VEASAN.com vsin.com/subscribe. Jensen, we're not going to give away the store for free. We'll discuss what we write up next week here in said betting guide. Have you finished your compilation, or are you still waiting for the weekend, my friend?
The deadline was yesterday at midnight, Dave. So any late entries, that is going to result in a zero in the grade book. So remember, kids, get everything in on time. I did 3 division futures. I did a conference future. I did 2 awards markets. And I would say that I have, I'm going to be intrigued to see where we line up. I did not really look at your division or conference or Super Bowl picks. So we'll have the live debate on the show. I'm going to say that I'm going to be chalky on one side, maybe slightly chalky on the other. And then we've got some surprises. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. That is what we call tease people. We will get to that. And again, because we're honest brokers here on VSiN by the Books. I do not know Jensen's picks. He has not looked at my picks here. They're all in. Joe Friso has access to all of it. Okay, let's get to what we're going to see in the College World Series, certainly on the pitch today, not just the United States and Australia. Let's get to today's edition of the Daily Docket.
Your snapshot of odds, trends, and futures. This is the Daily Docket.
North Carolina, Oklahoma. And then there were 2 in Omaha. Not sure how the jello shots are going to work out. I would think Oklahoma might be a small betting favorite at this juncture, but they're an underdog to win the College World Series at plus $1.40. Carolina, you get a lay $1.66 here, Jensen. Game 1, I do believe, is tomorrow on Saturday. What do you see between Carolina and Oklahoma?
Yeah, first of all, the Rocco's Jello Shot Challenge, it has already been won by West Virginia, 27,194. Ooh. Next closest is Ole Miss, 8,896. North Carolina, very much in the rears there, 4,667. Oklahoma, pretty respectable. They're actually ahead of North Carolina there, 5,277. That might be the last thing that Oklahoma is ahead of North Carolina entering this weekend, because it does feel like this is the Tar Heels series to lose. As we stand and how we got here, listen, Carolina, a very strong offensively, some big outbursts, and they're incredibly deep on the mound. It looks like it'll be Jason DeCaro, one of their aces on the weekend, that will get the ball in game 1. For people that have not watched and are looking to get involved here, Owen Hall is their standout center fielder, almost a .400 average. He's the main man in the middle. Gavin Gallagher is in there as well. Jake Schaffner, their shortstop. But you're looking at DeCaro on Saturday night. That first pitch is going to be at 8:00 Eastern time on ESPN. I would imagine their star freshman, Caden Glauber, will probably go. I would have to think that Scott Forbes, their head coach, saves him for game 2. Either way you look at it, a chance to clinch a national championship, or an opportunity to move it to a winner take all game 3. Game 2 on Sunday, Dave, will be at 1:30 or 2:30 Eastern on ABC. Oklahoma got here by rolling out 3 freshmen. Dave, this is unheard of. 3 freshmen absolutely dominated on the mound, and one of their standout guys will be left-hander Cord Rager, who's going to go in game 1 tomorrow night. He's a rising star who's been absolutely dominant, has been rolling, and is now kind of that established ace, if you will, of all the youngsters there for Skip Johnson's crew there and the Sooners. I would look at it, and I think it is accurately priced, that North Carolina is a significant favorite in the series. I would actually look at more so rolling the money lines here if you like the Tar Heels, and similarly for Oklahoma. Oklahoma is going to be a dog in these first 2 games, and how it works, Dave. North Carolina, by virtue of being the higher national seed, will be the home team tomorrow night. They will flip that to Oklahoma being the home team on Sunday afternoon, and then if there is a winner-take-all game 3 on Monday night, North Carolina will again be the home team.
You've been great with this stuff throughout the entirety of the College World Series. So we'll see Carolina, if they can get across the line here at $1.66 to wrap this up this weekend. We're hoping United States can get across the line today against Australia. Slight favorites to get that done. Now they're, over a $2 betting favorite to come out of this group stage as the winner. So that is the first and foremost match. And it's the first match of the day in Seattle, Washington later on today. again, didn't feel nervy in game one. I think we're all maybe against Paraguay. Would we be nervy? Really weren't. Came out shock and awe for USA. Do you expect more of that? The kind of fast off the pitch today to try to jump Australia early?
Not necessarily, Dave. How it stands up is both of these clubs winning their first matches. So by virtue of that, both receiving those coveted 3 points. And basically the winner of this match, if there is one, will lock up the one seed out of Group D into the knockout round. If both teams draw, they will get a point each. That will give them 4 total through 2 games of the group stage. And that all but can guarantee them a spot into the knockout round. Now, as it stands, we'll have a watchful eye on Paraguay and Turkey IE later on. Yep. Because that match out in Santa Clara there at Levi Stadium, if that match ends in a draw, then both you'll have United States and Australia. All they will need is a draw in their final matches to move on into the knockout round. So a lot at stake here. Of course, a win ends up locking it up. You don't really have to worry about anything in your final group match. You can kind of do and be creative against Turkey IE, but that's what's at stake. So Dave, here's how I played it. The United States on the money line, minus $1.60 at DraftKings. For those people just joining us, they are offering insurance on that bet. If the United States money line loses, you will get refunded a bonus bet. So might as well take the free shot there. Tactically, yeah, though, Dave, keeping in mind where we are standings-wise, I could see a little more conservative approach as we get later into the game. I think both teams will be measured in how they send numbers forward, their counterattack. I don't expect them to be aggressive, taking chances that would put them at a disadvantage on the counter. So I actually do kind of like a tighter match here. I'll play the under 2.5 at plus 104, which I found on Novig. That was the best price that I saw so far. And then, Dave, with that in mind, a correlated play. United States and Australia knowing a point is the minimum, must get a point out of this match. I played the draw on a profit boost at Hard Rock, up from plus 350 to plus 420. So I played a little half unit on a draw here just in case. Okay. And how crazy have we seen the draw be in this World Cup tournament? But now just getting into the psyche of these teams that have already got a win in pocket, they're not going to do anything crazy that would end up putting a loss on their record and then forcing them into almost a must win spot to qualify in that third and final group match.
Kind of like we talk about the U.S. Open, par is a good score. A draw would not be a bad result here for these two teams today. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I like the idea there. Alex Crook's going to join the program in the next hour, too, to break down this match in particular a little bit in more detail. But we do have 3 other matches. Very quickly, Scotland against Morocco, Brazil against Haiti, Turkey IE against Paraguay here. What are you looking for? Obviously, the Turkey IE matchup against Paraguay has implications here for that group for the United States. But out of the other two, anything that you like and maybe have some actionable spots that you might fancy?
We'll take the Group D, the other match there, Paraguay, Turkey, IE. I would have to believe that the Turkish can find a way to get this across. Paraguay was actually, they're really known for their defensive discipline, Dave, and it was anything but against the onslaught that was the United States. And I think they kind of got punched in the mouth and could never recover. I hate kind of where we've been with totals. I would lean the under here, but I don't want to play it. I think they will have a watchful eye on what happens with Australia and USA, and they've got a lot of time in between. That will adjust. So I won't play anything there until we have the result of Australia and USA. I would say that Brazil should beat the crap out of Haiti, but they looked anything but convincing in their first match. They will be in Philadelphia later on tonight for that one. Will we have more goals in Morocco, Scotland, or more lager by the Scots as they've drank the city of Boston dry?
How about that?
Of any of that. It has been unbelievable to see what's happened there, and that will be in Foxborough later on this afternoon.
I think Boston running out of beer is actually one of the signs of the apocalypse. My mom is the Bible scholar in the family, but I'd have to check that out because that does not sound possible at all. Okay, when we come back, Stephen Hennessy is going to join us here. Gents are going to break down here of round number two. It's underway at the United States Open. Are there any bets to be made now? That's next. Visa by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Friday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen was here with you. We told you about Joaquin Niemann was a play I really liked to come into round number two today. And then he took a nine on a hole, and we went, wait a minute, that seems a little bit out of character. Apparently, Jensen, so far, our guy Joaquin Niemann has gone birdie to begin round number two. And yet his score keeps going the other way. He was assessed a two-shot penalty, Jensen, for throwing his club. Conduct detrimental to the what are we doing? So, again, this is coming from Underdog Golf. You're seeing on your screen here on FanDuel Sports Network. He was assessed a two-shot penalty for throwing a club in the sixth hole in round one. The act was determined to be a serious misconduct under Rule 1.2B of the USGA. Jensen, I think I've seen it all now.
I'd never seen anything like that, especially the way he started.
Yes. And he started off birdie in the back nine. I wonder if Stephen Hennessy's seen anything like this. He, of course, does a great job as at the Golf Digest managing editor. Give him a follow on X as I do at S_HennessyGD for Golf Digest and joins us in the Progressive Guest Line. Stephen, I'm a little bit bitter about this ruling for Joaquin Niemann for a two-shot penalty for throwing his club. Might have a little top five ticket on him. That's not going to get home. What do you make of what's going on from the weather? And now I guess we have to assess people's conduct on the course.
Yeah, the weather, we were all fooled on golf Twitter. I think we were all convinced that the afternoon yesterday was going to be brutal. All my first round leaders were from the morning wave and, you know, just rip up those tickets kind of immediately as we saw with the afternoon looked like it ended up flipping. The morning wave seems to have the tougher end of the draw, but hopefully they'll get a break this afternoon like the afternoon wave did. Yeah, Niemann, I mean, we're all talking about this in our Golf Digest Slack channel right now. None of us can remember ever seeing this in a U.S. Open, in a major, someone for throwing a club. I mean, we've seen plenty of guys throw clubs and, you know, show their frustration on the golf course. A two-stroke penalty is serious. You know, the rule as it stands, 1.2B, like you said, Dave, it says they could put in a one-stroke penalty. It doesn't mention a two-stroke penalty. It also says they could disqualify a player for serious misconduct, but, you know, that didn't happen, obviously. There's not video yet of what happened to Niemann. I'm sure a fan out there, you know, every fan at these golf tournaments these days have their phone out recording. So I'm sure it'll surface eventually. It must have been pretty bad. Maybe it was dangerous. Maybe it was toward the fans or another player or something. But yeah, never seen anything quite like this in a major. It's a weird thing, and I'm sure we'll find out a little more here in the next couple hours.
Stephen, I seem to remember watching Rory McIlroy yesterday in his round, and after a chip that he didn't like, took another whack and brought up a fair amount of earth with him. I did not see a penalty stroke on Roars there, and I wonder why, as one of the chosen sons of the PGA Tour. I digress. Let me ask you about highlights you take away from day one. And of course, the weather being one of them. But the amount of names and big ones that we have towards the top of the leaderboard within striking distance, maybe your top two guys that you were really impressed with yesterday.
Yeah, you got to start with Wyndham Clark. You know, he had been struggling quite a bit, really, since the U.S. Open win in 2023 at LACC. This is kind of a similar setup at Shinnecock, pretty wide fairways. That's where we saw him succeed at LACC. He, you know, his weakness is not to be too accurate off the tee. And so far, you know, he's been lights out with the driver. And what we've seen the last couple of weeks is his putter has kind of returned to his form. He won in Texas at the Byron Nelson, gaining over 12 strokes with his putter, kind of a ridiculous number, and then backed it up at the Memorial with a third place finish, gaining over about 9 strokes on his approach play. So he's really putting everything together, and, you know, nearly shot a 63 in the opening round at Shinnecock. Really impressive, almost matched Tommy Fleetwood's Sunday 63 there from 2018. The other name you have to be just, you know, pleased that if you're a golf fan, is Dustin Johnson reappearing from the dark ages. We have an inside joke at Golf Digest. We've been calling him Dustbin Johnson because he hasn't done anything, guys. Actually, since LACC, he finished 10th. He was sort of in the mix and faltered a little bit, but that's his last major top 20. And if it wasn't for a double bogey on the sixth hole yesterday, which was really a sloppy double as play was ending, he would have been right next to Wyndham Clark on the leaderboard and still is right there. So impressed by him. Gary Woodland, Matt Fitzpatrick, John Rahm, these are all U.S. Open champions, proving, you know, Shinnecock is just such a great venue for this tournament. And, you know, the cream is rising to the top, as they say.
All right, well, one name of those guys that is not a U.S. Open champion as of yet is Scottie Scheffler, and we thought this would be the perfect symmetry. 30th birthday is on Sunday. Of course, new dad again for a second time on Father's Day. Complete the career Grand Slam. I mean, it's the perfect Hollywood script to get Scottie across the line. 2 over in what turned out to be the difficult conditions. Steven, I'm seeing close to 14-1 out there in the live betting market. Am I silly for not grabbing that number now? Does Scotty have, hopefully for him, a really good 3 days coming?
I can't talk anyone out of betting Scotty Scheffler. You know, I might also look at what the top 5 live market is as well. You know, he's 8 back right now, but you know, you expect Wyndham Clark to come back to the field a little bit. Maybe it's over the weekend, but yeah, I mean, his stats were a little all over the place yesterday. Didn't really do anything particularly well. Lost the stroke on approach. You know, was kind of even off the tee, and that's what we've seen be his weakness. Brandel Chamblee on Golf Channel pointed out he's a little inconsistent with the right miss these days off the tee, and we saw that a bunch yesterday. Ended up in the fescue, hit some decent recovery shots, but yeah, we've seen the Thursday struggles be a thing for Scheffler all season, and that continues to be the case. I expect him, like you said, maybe the weather is a little better for him in the afternoon, and you know, he puts up a 67 and all of a sudden he's under par and right in the thick of it. The rule of thumb has been, if he's anything double digits to hammer that, I can't, like I said, I can't talk anybody out of betting that, maybe a top 5 if you're getting like a plus 150 or so.
It has been also an amateur invasion here, Steve. When we look at where Ryder Cohen right now, 1 under in his second round through 6, he's tied for 2nd at 3 under here. If you are looking into maybe some of the lesser names or maybe some guys off to a slow start, I know a lot of us like Tommy Fleetwood. Justin Rose also right now is into his second round. I think he's parred the first hole. He's at plus 1. Are there any other names that started slower outside of the Scottie Schefflers that you'd be interested in backing here, not only making the cut, but into the weekend?
Yeah, Justin Thomas just had a great birdie on the difficult 11th hole, the par 3 there. He's 40-1 live. I do like that. I like what I'm seeing from JT. He's just like Wyndham Clark, his weakness has been the big miss off the tee, and he's kind of shored that up the last couple starts since the return of injury. So 40-1 live is pretty good. The other name, Cameron Young, sitting there at 63-1. You look at his stats from yesterday, he gained over 2.5 strokes ball striking, which everyone who bets golf knows. You look at the ball striking numbers, the putting could be, you know, a little random round to round, and he lost a bunch of strokes putting yesterday, but he's been one of the best putters on tour the last 2 seasons, so you expect that to turn around. So 62-1 on Cam Young just feels a little juicy. He's at plus 2, but just kind of like Scheffler, if he writes things a little bit, puts up a 67 today, he's right back in the thick of it. And that number is just kind of shouting at me. I think you got to take a shot at Cam Young if you're not on him pre-flop.
That's pretty amazing. It's Scheffler, who's 14-1, and Cam Young is 60+1, and they're both at 2 over par. Tells you about the betting market there, Stephen. Target score. I think Jensen and I were, you know, everybody we talked to leading up to it, and, you know, you watch, and we all become pseudo-weathermen leading up to the U.S. Open. I think even par might have been the target score. That feels like it's been changed and maybe thrown out the window. What do you think is a realistic target score to get this across the line come Sunday?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to be like 5 under. That's actually what I said when I was on with humans on Monday night. I think, you know, these guys are so good. Obviously, we've seen only 3 players at Shinnecock U.S. Opens in the last 4 U.S. Opens get under par. But I think we see a handful of guys get there. I mean, Wyndham Clark could push it up to 7-8 under by the end of the day. And, you know, a few other guys as well, Woodland, Rahm, Fitzpatrick, that, you know, they're right there. I think they could all get to 5. And then you just kind of hold on the weekend. The greens are going to firm up. I think you're going to have to get to 5 under to feel comfortable about your chances to win.
Fantastic breakdown as always. And that crystal ball, you're looking pretty good if you had 5 under before the tournament began. Steven, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Enjoy round 2. We'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy it.
There he is, Stephen Hennessy, Golf Digest Managing Editor. Give him a follow on X at @S_HennessyGD. Does a great job there. Great breakdown there. I got to look at Cameron Young now. It's 62-1. I mean, Jensen, come on. Guys, 2 over par.
I just did.
And stop assessing.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Stop assessing our golfers' 2-shot penalties. Okay, we'd appreciate that. We'll discuss all of that and then some when you come back with us right here. It's VSiN by the Books.